The election is right around the corner. The debates are behind us. Kissing babies? Well, that never happened in 2020. Sniffing babies? Yes. Kissing them? Nope, not going to happen in 2020. But all of this means we have tips galore for any would-be politician. Today, I give Mackenzie Smith, an aspiring wannabe, possibly might someday run and ruin my life, quasi-politician, some tips that I have learned from past political campaigns. We do all this in this week's Debriefing of the Law. Welcome to this week's Debriefing of the Law. I am Joel Oster and Mackenzie Smith. Thank you for joining us today.
Coming at you from the swing state of Pennsylvania, here I am.
It has to be an exciting time there in Pennsylvania. And we're going to unpack that here in just a bit because we are in the throes of the campaign season. It is coming down to the wire. And we're going to definitely talk. We're going to debrief the whole political campaign scenario. But before we get there, I do want to just make a couple of comments about what happened last week. We were out of pocket for a couple of reasons, and so we had Scott Briscoe. I recorded a previous interview with Scott Briscoe where he did crazy legal tips. It was a great podcast. If you missed it, go back and listen to Scott. He has his own website where he talks about the crazy legal tips. You don't want to miss that one. But we're going to kind of pick up on that here just a bit this week and do some crazy election tip ideas. But before we get there, the reason why we missed last week was I finally got succumbed to the COVID virus. And I don't know if any of you have experienced what COVID is actually like personally, and it was very fascinating from my end to experience it. But Mackenzie, you had another experience. Your experience was you ran a marathon. Now, I got to tell you, I am not sure what is harder on the body, going through COVID-19 or running 26 point whatever, 2 miles. Was anyone chasing you?
No one was chasing me.
Wow,
but
why?
You know, yeah, as you know, I had to run the race virtually. So I did run, I ran it by myself. I mean, I had, you know, some friends, or well, a friend come run a portion of it with me. And then my mom actually made the decision the night before to come run the last 2 miles with me, which was
nice.
Like so awesome. I really needed the moral support at that point. And
she is smart. I can tell she is one smart person to pick the last 2 miles, not the first two. I think I can take her on the last 2 miles.
Exactly. And now she can say technically like she finished a marathon. She literally finished a marathon.
That's right.
Yeah. So smart. it was great. Yeah.
Yeah, I once ran a 10K way back when. This is like I was in seventh grade. I ran with my brother, and we had this pack where we're gonna do this together, right? We're gonna be in it for the long haul, and we're gonna be there for each other, support each other, right? Like brothers would do. We get to the last 100 yards, and boom, he took off, left me in the dust. Thank you so much, brother. Love you too. Did your mother do that to you?
No, she actually was really sweet about it. She was like, you know, once we get around the corner and my family was waiting for me in the parking lot, like where the trail finished and where I was going to finish the marathon. So they had a little finish line set up for me with signs and balloons and stuff. And she said, okay, when we round the corner, like, I'm just going to stop so they can take your picture and stuff like that. So it was really sweet. Like we did, it was a long, like almost 5 hours.
Wow, that is impressive.
Yeah, but it was a very good experience. I have so much respect now for people who do this, you know.
Yes, I gotta tell you, I am impressed
continually.
You did it.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, do you have another venture in mind? Are you gonna do this again or is this one and done?
You know, I will never say never. I don't want to limit myself, but it did take, I think I went for like 60, between 64 and 70 training runs, and I started training in July. So, you know, for someone who works full time and has like, you know, 75 children, it is a very big commitment. It's a big time commitment. So I don't foresee myself having the time to, you know, commit to this again in the foreseeable future. Maybe when my kids are grown up and I have more time, like maybe I'll get back into it. But for now, it was a one and done. It was a bucket list item, and well,
that
I finished.
That is impressive.
And, yep. I can move on with my life as the country descends into chaos. So that too shall impressive. I descend into corpulence now that I am done. And I'm
but
ready
I gotta
to hibernate.
Say, I think running is actually very beneficial. In fact, I'm kind of looking back on my own life. Now, I'm a big guy. You know, no one's going to confuse me to be a long-distance runner. But I like to run long distance. I've not run a marathon. I've run a half marathon, which some people say, why do you even bother with a half? I mean, that just is like you couldn't quite do it, so you throw a half in there. But at least the marathon is somewhere in the conversation of what you are saying. But nonetheless, I am a big guy, and I just went through COVID. I got COVID, and apparently I got it from my son, who is in high school and plays soccer, things like that. Well, nonetheless, I got to tell you, Mackenzie, COVID from, and I hesitate to say this because I know not everyone's experience is the same, right? And I don't want to give people false hope, but man, was it ever a big nothing for me personally. It's been 10 days. I've been in quarantine, which, by the way, we got to talk about that. That is a lot of fun. If you can do quarantine, go ahead and do it. I'm telling you, it is the way to go. My wife has been downstairs, and whenever I want anything to eat, all I got to do is ring that bell. I think probably when I get out of quarantine, I'm going to find that bell somewhere stuffed down my whatever. But nonetheless, she has been waiting on me hand and foot. I'm sure that's going to come to an end here in a couple of days. But
I cannot believe it. I feel like after a day and a half, my husband would just be ringing the bell and nobody would come. Like I would have moved out.
It is not just me. It's also my son got it at the exact same time. So he's been going through this as well. And of course, for him, I mean, this is heaven. I mean, he has been quarantined into his room where his computer is, his games are. So he's been gaming nonstop, you know, whatever during school. And so, yeah, this has been heaven for him. But nonetheless, my wife, his poor wife, has had to come up and feed us three times a day. And I just so look forward to that food. But nonetheless, she doesn't want to get it. And I got to tell you, from a personal perspective, it has been nothing. I don't know what kind of horror stories you've heard, and there are definitely a lot of horror stories out there that are real. I'm not saying anyone has made this stuff up, but for me, it has just been some periodic fevers, and that is it. So, you know, like every day,
I think
that's
what makes it almost scarier, right? Like it's the unknown or the intermittent nature of it. Like it's for so many people, it doesn't seem to be a big deal at all. So a lot of people aren't as, you know, socially conscious as you, and they'll just like keep going around living their lives with a mild illness. And then Right. Boom, I mean, you infect someone who, for whatever, I mean, as I was running my marathon and chatting with my friend who came out to run with me, he had just had a friend pass away the week prior at age 36 from COVID.
Wow.
So it's like, this definitely happens, and it almost, in my opinion, makes it scarier because it's like, what if, you know, someone in your situation, if you hadn't known that your son had it and were convinced, maybe you would have just brushed it off as a mild cold and kept going on with your life and being out in public.
To that point, and that's actually a fair point, I will say that I was very cognizant of the symptoms, and I was not asymptomatic, but so it was the first day, and I had tennis that night, and I was looking forward to tennis, playing tennis in the evening, but as the day was progressing, I kept on having this cough. I'm like, huh. You know, nowadays, you know, I mentioned this off the line, it's like, no one is sick at all. We have been wearing masks and socially distancing. So the fact that I was even coughing in my household got my mind to be thinking, I must be dying here. I must have COVID. Why else would I be coughing? There's no reason to cough right now. And so it kept on persisting throughout the day. And then I started getting this weird feeling of, maybe I had a little bit of achiness. You know, it wasn't enough that I would have canceled tennis normally, but I was thinking, you know what? Maybe this achiness is something. Maybe I do have COVID. At least the thought is in the back of your mind. And so tennis was canceled that evening. Not because of me. It's just cold weather here in Kansas. So it was canceled. And so then the next day is when my son got tested positive. Then I realized, okay, maybe I should go get tested myself. And that's when we found out. But yeah, you do see those small symptoms of the cough, the slight achiness, things like that, and ended up turning up being a COVID. Your friend that had it, obviously don't disclose any identities, but was he healthy?
No, he was not. He had pre-existing issues. So,
okay.
You know, it wasn't a huge surprise. But it also, you know, it was a person who wasn't going to die right now.
Right. No, right.
So, yeah, I think that, and you don't know, like when you go to the grocery store and the gas station and the train station and whatever, you know, you don't know if someone in that environment is suffering from something like that or has some kind of, you know, I mean, you can tell usually when someone's elderly, although they are getting very good at plastic surgery. But you can generally unless it's Jane Fonda, like you will know. But, you know, other young people with, you know, some latent conditions or whatever, I mean, you just don't know. So it's to me, I feel like that's almost what makes it scarier. It's like a shark attack when you don't know like what's underneath the surface, and that you know, it creates fear in people, and that fear is there for, it's a self-preservation,
it is real.
Right?
It is real. If you are in a high-risk category, it is really scary. We actually kind of got lucky. My brother was supposed to come down and visit me last Tuesday from Oregon. And so he was going to fly down here. If he had flown down here, we ended up canceling at the very last minute because we kind of thought something was up. If he had flown down, well, he would have probably been here for the next month because he would have been quarantined and not able to fly for quite some time. But nonetheless, I do think that in my past, I'm a runner. I've run a lot. Like I said, not marathons, but I run a half marathon and things like that. And I think it's if you have a lifestyle of exercise, it does build up your immune system. Healthy eating your fruits and vegetables, it does build up your immune system. And at least the people that I've talked to that do exercise, it seems like their immune system is better able to beat this off if you are not in the exercise realm. Again, I am not a doctor. I could be totally clear out here on the limb saying this. It just seems like the if you do regularly exercise, if you're healthy, though no guarantees, you might be able to get through this.
No, I agree. I think it's, you know, it does kind of renew your focus on, you know, keeping yourself healthy and in good, you know, shape and condition as possible. And I think there definitely is something to, I mean, look, like it's not a question as to whether like being outside, like even in the winter, being outside doing some moderate to strenuous exercise, like it definitely improves your resilience. I mean, so the week after a marathon, you actually are supposed to do like a couple of light jogs, just because it's good for your muscles. It's part of the recovery. So I hadn't done anything. I've been sitting since Saturday. I've been sitting on the couch eating donuts. So finally last night I was like, yeah, I earned it. I mean, come on. So
that is my kind of training. You are now my hero.
Yeah. Cupcakes, donuts, like everything. But finally last night I was like, all right, tomorrow I'm starting to feel a little stiff. Like tomorrow I'll go and take a jog. Well, as it turns out, we are experiencing tropical rainstorm Zeta today here in Pennsylvania. And I went anyway, and I ended up pouring rain. It's about 50 degrees outside. And I just went for half an hour and jogged. And, you know, there's no one, I didn't see another person. No one's out there, but you do feel healthier after. You're like, you know, I'm resilient. I can go run in the freezing cold rain and, you know, enjoy it. And you do feel like your body is working. And I think there is something to be said for that. So I'm not a doctor either. I'm certainly not an athlete. I did not run a marathon as fast as T.E.
Barber. If you run a marathon, you're a freaking athlete. All right. Let's just leave it right there.
Maybe a hot dog eating champion. I don't know. We'll see. But
that is impressive. Well, it was an interesting experience now to go through it. I do feel like I'm somewhat immune. One last thought now on that topic. You know, I talked about this just a bit, but I want to explore it again. And that is, will we ever go back as a society? Because now we are so used to wearing masks, we're so used to social distancing that no one is getting sick. And in fact, it's like if we get sick now, we assume it's the COVID and we are going to die, but we're not getting sick. And so will we go back to the way we did things before, where you will go into a crowded subway, no one's wearing a mask, everyone is sneezing and coughing? I got to, if I'm at a grocery store and I hear someone sneezing, I'm immediately looking at them like they have the plague, because they probably do. But I mean, what do you think? Are we going back to the way things were?
I hope so. I mean, look, like, I get it. And I have the same feeling now. Like, I think about all the times I've been at a crowded train station at rush hour in Philadelphia or in New York City, and it's wall-to-wall people in the middle of winter, and people are coughing and sneezing. And I look back at that now and I'm like, wow. I mean, I would be
right.
It never really bothered me. Like, I'm not a very, you know, I'm like a hypochondriac type person. So it never really bothered me before, but I feel like now it would bother me. But I also feel like, you know, and I'm speaking from a position of being lucky enough to be a relatively young, relatively healthy person. And so I, you know, I'm speaking from my point of view, but I completely acknowledge and understand that there are many different valid points of view. But from my point of view, you know, I think that we give up a lot. You know, I want to be able to go to concerts and museums and crowded restaurants and crowded bars. And, you know, there's an energy that you get from just being around people in public that, you know, I don't want to give up, and I don't want my children to grow up and not be able to experience that. You know, some of my best memories are traveling, you know, through Europe or wherever in the world where it's like super crowded and you're in, you know, a crowd of people and you don't know the language and it's exciting and you learn so much and you grow as a person. So I hope we get through this and kind of move on and whatever. But I do think there will be some permanent changes, unfortunately. But
I will say that right now I am now immune for the next 6 months to a year. Who knows? And so I feel like I'm all of a sudden invincible. I can go anywhere and do whatever I want. I can't get it a second time. Well, we are in the middle of campaign season, and it's been, I don't know if fascinating is the right word for it. I don't want to say we live in unprecedented times, because that word has been way overused. But this is coming to a close now. We have next Tuesday is the election. So that means probably within, I don't know, a couple of months, maybe by December, we'll actually know who our president is. No, I mean, what are your thoughts? The election is right around the corner. I know that you and I don't see eye to eye totally when it comes to political candidates and ideologies and things like that. But what is your take on the state of this campaign?
Well, I mean, we are towards the end of the campaign. Whether we're towards the end of the election remains to be seen, right? But
right.
I was thinking about it recently, and you know, I'm actually going to be working at my polling place for half the day on Tuesday. I'll be done before the polls close. But I think here in Pennsylvania, given the Supreme Court's rulings this week and last week, that that our state can count votes up to 3 days after the election, I don't think Pennsylvania will be called on Tuesday evening. So for me, I go home Tuesday evening, I'm looking at Florida, I'm looking at Ohio, I'm looking at Georgia. I guess I'm looking at Texas, but you know, Florida, I think, is a biggie at this point.
Well, Pennsylvania is obviously huge, and that Supreme Court decision is going to be fascinating. You're referencing the case where I believe an injunction was sought from the Supreme Court, and they denied injunctive relief. So the bottom line is, I believe the holding of the lower court was Pennsylvania has to count the mail-in ballots if they are received within 3 days, even if there's no postmark showing it was mailed before the election day. Is that accurate?
I believe that's accurate. I know the 3 days is accurate. The postmark, I'm not 100% sure, but I believe that's accurate.
Yeah, that was the big controversy, was they theoretically could send these out the day after the election and don't put a postmark on it, and then they have to count them. And so that's why the fraudulent issue is going, hey, wait a second, can't they just stuff the ballot box the day after? Hey, we need an extra 2,000 votes. Guess what? They just showed up in the mail, 2,000 votes, all without a postmark. You got to accept it. Well, the Supreme Court has, I think they're going to take up the merits of that case. At least I know the Republican Party there in Pennsylvania has asked the Supreme Court to take up the merits of that case. And so that might not be the final word, but again, it's going to be fascinating to just sit back and watch and see what happens. Now, you and I have both sat back and we've watched this. We've watched the debates. And so I think you and I have both come up with some tips, right? Some guidance for future would-be politicians, things that we have learned that other people might want to pay attention to. So are you ready to go through our brilliant, wonderful tips?
I mean, I'm ready with the disclaimer that, like, I've never won an election for anything. Okay, so take it with a grain of salt. You know, I'm just, you know, armchair quarterbacking this whole thing, and I'm happy to do so.
Hey, but you are a lawyer, you have a brain, you run a marathon, and so hey, I think your opinion is just as valid as anyone in a reality TV series. But nonetheless, here is my first tip that I have, and I got this one from the last debate. Now, I don't know if you followed the last debate. Actually, I was texting you, so I know you followed it. But here is my my tip from the last debate, all right? When signing off of the debate, so at the end, do not just throw in, "Thank you for moderating this debate. Thank you for listening to me, America. And oh yeah, by the way, down with oil." I am just suggesting that ending your debate with "down with oil" is not exactly the best way to end a debate. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't think, did Biden actually say that?
Yes, at the end of the debate, he was clearly tired. And he just said, yeah, we want to kind of do away with the oil industry.
He said he's going to transition away from fossil fuels.
Right. It was a fumble. He did not need to throw that in there at the very end. He had been doing well, at least, you know, theoretically. Why throw that at the end? So you're saying it's being blown out of proportion.
Well, A, it's being blown out of proportion, and B, I actually respect his honesty about this. I mean, I really think that Biden truly believes that the way this country needs to go, and the world generally, but especially, you know, here, we need to transition away from fossil fuels, create a green energy economy, and a lot of new jobs. Like, I sound like I'm campaigning for him right now, but I think that's what he truly believes, and that's truly his vision. And I, you know, honestly, I respect him more for being forthcoming about it than someone who tries to pander for votes just to win. It's like, look, if you don't, if you really feel strongly against that, then don't vote for him. But at least we know what his position is. Like, that's the way an election should be, in my opinion.
I get that, and you made some very valid points. My only suggestion is, that's not really a throwaway topic at the end of the debate, right?
Yeah.
You want to stay strong to the end. And if you're going to suggest things like "down with oil," it's not a throwaway as they are rolling the credits, right? The end is not the time to rush out such things like, "Hey, and did I mention I want to bomb Russia or pack the courts?" You know, these big campaign issues are better left not being thrown in at the last minute. I guess that's all my suggestion is you did well up until that point. Might as well make that be your campaign stump speech the next time around. Don't throw it in as an add-on at the last second.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. And I think the guys on Pod Save America, actually, they had him on like the next day or within the next 2 days, and they kind of like were giving him airtime to like explain what he meant. And his explanation was very articulate and very good. So, you know, I would suggest to anyone to listen to that episode if they are unclear on what his policy is there. But, yeah,
it's
so
not just
I do agree. Yeah.
You know, it's not just that. He didn't even make it to his helicopter before he had to explain himself and defend himself. it was that quick. They realized, what did I just say? And so that kind of led me to some other debate tips. Now, are you a debater?
I have debated, yes,
okay,
like in high school, and
good.
I do it all the time in the courtroom. Like, it's part of my job. Yeah.
That's what we do. So here are my debate tips. I'm just curious to see if you think I'm onto something. Do I have a future as a debate preparer for politicians? Here's my first debate tip. Speak a lot, right? This allows you to keep from getting more questions. The moderator, remember, is your enemy, and she's trying to make you look stupid. So speak a lot. And the more you speak, the better off you're going to do. Any thoughts?
I mean, well, it depends on how good of a debater you are. I mean,
that's irrelevant. Just speak. Just talk. It doesn't matter. Just talk.
I think, how about this? When in doubt, just keep talking.
Exactly. Which brings me to my next tip. All right, here's my next tip. The moderator's question is really nothing more than a pause, allowing you to catch your breath before diving into more of your stump speech. You don't need to actually pay attention to the words used during the question. Again, refer to rule number one, just speak a lot. Would you agree with that? Just totally ignore the question. Questions are irrelevant filler.
Yeah, I mean, to a point, but yeah, I definitely think, like, you know, when we're in court, you're trying to persuade either a judge or sometimes a jury to accept your position. And I think when you're in a presidential debate or a debate, an election debate, you are trying to persuade voters, right? So you want to get out your material that you think is most persuasive to the voters you need. So, you know, if it's halfway through the debate and you haven't gotten the question about the topic that you want to talk about, like, you just got to start talking about it, like, no matter what. You got to find a way to, like, get there.
This actually is a true story, but I received media training in my previous job where we had media consultants come in. They prepared us for how to respond to questions whenever we had a high-profile case. I swear to God, this is what they told us. They said, it does not matter what the question is. You just give your answer, no matter whatever it is you want to say. Ignore the question. That's just some way to pivot to getting your point across. So they actually trained us to ignore the question, and I think that you saw a lot of that during the debate. Which kind of leads me to my next point. While speaking a lot, don't actually say anything. See, here's why. You might need wiggle room later on, right? And besides the moderator being your worst enemy, the next biggest enemy would be your own words. So be careful.
So, like, not down with oil.
Exactly. Yeah, don't say that. Don't really say anything. For example, right? I'm going to give you some examples here. The question is, well, who built the cages is a great question, which leads me to Trump being a really bad man. Orange is bad. Don't avoid orange. You see how you dodge the question? Hey, who built the cages? Great question, which leads me to Trump is a really bad person. So that's how that, you don't want to actually say anything. You might need wiggle room later on.
I mean, yeah, and I think it's funny because that suggestion might actually not apply if you're Donald Trump, because you can say whatever you want and it can be like blatantly a lie, and then, like, later you just double down on the lie. So if you're Donald Trump, you speak a lot, say whatever the heck you want, throw in a locker up, like, every here or there, and you're good. Everyone else, you're going to need some wiggle room.
Hey, by the way, I'm losing you just a little bit on your audio, but I don't know if it's where you're speaking at.
Sorry,
but we're just losing you a little bit. Well, that's all right. Which does lead me to, I'm going to call it audible here, my next rule, which is this. If you are caught in a lie, repeat it louder. I think that's probably the best way to get around a lie, just to say it with more emphasis, and then you're bound to win your argument. All right, here's my next tip for you, debate tip. All right, are you writing these down?
I am, yes, I'm taking copious notes.
Good, because I think you can be our next politician. All right, here it is. If you are going to say something, right, here's your default. So number one, resist the urge. But if you are going to say something, speak about children. Everything you do is for the children. I'm going to give you some examples here. See, we need to build this wall for the children. Tax cuts for the top 1%, because children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way, I say, or someone did. We need to pack the courts. Yes. Why? For the children. You see how this works, Mackenzie? It's always for the children.
It's got to be for the children. I mean, you know, I agree with that. Everything we do should be for the children.
Who can object to that,
right? I don't know
if
I agree on the substance, but, you know.
It doesn't matter the substance. The answer is it's for the children. No more debate needed or allowed, because this is for the children. Now, if that gets old.
Well, I agree with that. Then you can say to your opponent, like, what, do you hate children?
Exactly. You know? I'm for the children. You hate children. See, now you're getting it. You are political material. I am winning.
I'm ready
you over.
To write me in. Write me in on Tuesday. I'm telling you.
I'm charging you for this, by the way. This is consultation right now. All right. Now, let's say that you've already used the children routine umpteen times. You want to get a little bit of variety. Here's your second go-to. The elderly. All right. If children gets old, pun coming. Then you pivot to the elderly, but this is slightly nuanced because with the elderly, you scare them. You know, my opponent wants to take away their Social Security, socialize your medicine with death panels, and take away early bird pricing at Golden Corral. So as long as you scare the elderly, that's again a go-to. You will not lose by just saying that my opponent here is looking to take away all of the elderly's rights. So again, you taking notes on here? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. Again, I think like if you're Donald Trump, like maybe, you know, you've kind of lost any moral authority to speak about the elderly given the death rates from COVID. So again, like I think he should probably avoid that. It's not a good look when he gets COVID at age whatever, 70, whatever he is, and then right. comes out and says like, don't worry, if you get this, you're going to get better. It's like, well, there's a lot of people who aren't here to refute that because they're dead. From
now,
COVID.
Yes.
So
now,
you need to not be saying that.
I don't want to call BS, but I am almost going to call BS on Trump's COVID diagnosis. I just went through COVID. How can you go through the symptoms that he went through and then test negative within, what, 3 or 4 days? Is he like Superman? I don't get how.
Everyone I talk to, not everyone, but there are some diehards in my life that, you know, I try not to talk to about these.
Right.
But it does seem weird and fishy. And I'm not a conspiracy person.
No.
Like, I really strongly do not think that people should, you know, succumb to conspiracies with no facts and no evidence. But it does seem bizarre to me that the sequence of events as we know them would have taken place as have been reported. So I don't know. You probably have more insight than I do, or you definitely do, having just had COVID. So, you know, I don't know, but it definitely seems weird.
He was hospitalized with COVID, and it was negative within 4 days of first announcing he had tested positive. How is that possible?
I don't know. It seems very weird.
I actually wasn't even tested at the beginning. I knew I had it because my son was tested. I went ahead and got tested about a week into it because I had no symptoms, or my symptoms were so meek and mild, I thought, I'm going to go and just get tested to see if I still have it. I did. I still tested positive a week into it with very, very minimal symptoms. And so I'm just amazed that someone can be hospitalized and then test negative within just a few short days. All right. Well, those are my
debate. But I guess, like, either way, if he, you know, whether it's totally legit or whether he was like trying to accomplish something through a stunt or something, it didn't work. I mean, nothing has changed. So, you know, in terms of people's perceptions or whatever,
I just think
the bottom line is like, maybe Trump should stay away from trying to say he like cares about the elderly at this point. Like, you know,
all right, move on
to another topic. Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Well, we're going over some of our tips now for campaign season. So if you want someone wants to run for office, you'll know to follow these tips. And I just kind of was kidding you earlier about taking notes. This is all going to be in our blog for this week. So you can check out the show notes here to get the link to our blog. But again, these are must-have tips if you ever are thinking about running for office. I don't care if you're a Republican, a Democrat. If you're a Democrat, don't bother with these. But no seriously, these are important tips. And so they're so important. We're writing them down, giving them to you at free of charge. And so, Mackenzie, here's my next tip for you. When speaking in front of cameras, try to avoid any impersonations, particularly of the handicapped. Now, don't you think that's a wise idea?
Yeah, that was one of the most grotesque events, in my opinion, in the first Trump campaign. Like, I loved John McCain.
Yes.
Love him.
Right.
American hero. Like, it was so gross. So yeah, I would
now, what
definitely
are you talking
that
about?
One
what?
This one applies across the board. Like, no one should be doing this in a campaign or just like generally in life. Like, how about just we not do that?
Now, I will tell you, because I go and do stand-up comedy, that if you go to the club, you will see some comics, not me, but you'll see some comics. They will do edgy, material. Well, they will, you know, make fun of people that I just don't feel comfortable making fun of. You got to have some lines to draw. One of the standard rules for comedy is you always punch up. Because when you punch down, you take advantage of people who are lower than you. You just seem like a bully, and so don't do it. But nonetheless, now, I actually wasn't referring to what you were referring to. I was referring to one time when Trump was back in 2016, and he made some physical gestures with his wrist, you know, bent in like an L shape, pushing it to the middle of his chest. Clearly, he is making fun of some handicapped people. But you are referring to when he then made fun of John McCain for being a war hero. He said, look, he was caught. In my book, war heroes don't get caught. Is that what you were referring to?
Well, McCain was tortured, right? And as a result, he couldn't, I don't think he could raise either one arm or both arms. I'm not quite sure, but
okay,
at least one of his arms, like above the shoulder, he couldn't raise. So Trump actually made a physical, like mocked that. And it's like, well, the next time you decide not to dodge the draft and you go to war and get captured and tortured for whatever, a year or two, then you can come back and say, well, I mean, look, he can say whatever he wants. He certainly has a First Amendment right to say whatever he wants. I'm just saying, like,
not a good idea.
The number of, you know, green nausea face emojis that got sent around the country like at that moment was probably in the millions. So
So that is a very good tip. So if you are going to be speaking in front of the cameras, and by the way, there's another tip for you. There are always cameras out there. I mean, no matter what, someone has their cell phone on them and they are recording you. So just avoid any impersonations of the handicapped. Remember, punch up, do not punch down. All right. Well, how about this next tip here? Do you know who Elaine Benes is?
Yeah, who doesn't? I mean, if I didn't know who Elaine Benes was, you should fire me immediately from this podcast.
Who does it? You know, you mentioned it, so I got to talk about this. Sorry, Brooke Bolin. I'm going to throw you under the bus here. Brooke, you know, is our wonderful marketing person. She now does all of our marketing, does a great job. I asked her this morning, do you know who Elaine Benes is? You know what she said? What?
Who's that? Is she under 30? I need to know. Yes. Like, it's a generational thing, you know?
I had no idea anyone would be alive and functioning as an adult, even though a young adult, who does not know who Elaine Benes is. But nonetheless, it definitely made me feel old. But yes, Elaine, if you don't know who Elaine Benes is, Brooke, I'm talking to you here now, just go to our show notes here, and we will provide a GIF. Is that how you say it? GIF, GIF?
I say GIF. I don't know. I think the popular, like the most accepted pronunciation is GIF, but that reminds me of peanut butter. So.
Well, I had no idea. I just, Brooke mentioned GIF, and so I'm thinking, okay, well, then it must be GIF because she's a lot more hip than I am. You know, I'm almost 50, so she said GIF. So of Elaine Benes dancing. And so here's my tip. Do not go to Elaine Benes for dance tips. If you are a politician, maybe this is a better idea. Just avoid any and all dancing altogether, especially if you are a white male. Any thoughts on that?
Okay, totally disagree.
Oh, really?
I think Elaine Benes is a goddess and one of the, you know, greatest dancers of all time. And in fact, like I have to say this because I am an Elaine Benes-esque dancer. I actually, for those of our listeners who don't know, I've been married twice, but the first time I got married, we had a big wedding with hundreds of people and like a very expensive photographer. And they put together this beautiful album after, obviously that's what you're paying them thousands of dollars to do. And of course you want pictures of the bride dancing, you know, with all her wedding guests, her wedding. And literally, Joel, every single picture of me dancing, I had my left pointer finger pointed one way, my right pointer finger pointed another way. Like there was some awkward, like I looked like an ostrich in half of them.
Wow.
And it was just like, I think at the end of the day, they just had to throw their hands up and say like, well, we got to pick some of these, like we're putting them in the album. So whatever. And that,
that is fascinating. Now, can I also tell the listeners that there will be video of that as well on our side? Or are you going to keep that to yourself?
No, I think that was part of the court order when we got divorced to destroy the evidence that this ever occurred. Like, let's just not even talk about it. But, you know, if anyone ever meets me in person at a social event, like I still like to dance. So, you know,
right, right, right.
It's still happening, for better or worse.
Hey, you are Elaine Bennis. All right. She is definitely one of my favorite actors out there. Well, I am going to put a video on our show notes of a video from the 2000 Democratic Convention, where you'll see video of Al Gore and Hillary Clinton doing the Macarena. Is that how you pronounce that? Macarena? You know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hilarious video. That probably is the real reason why she lost in 2016. That video is still out there. Hey, it's just not a good idea. Avoid any and all dancing if you do not know how to dance, which that, by the way, would apply to me. I can't even dance like Elaine Bennis. True story. I grew up in the Nazarene church, and we did not believe in doing anything fun. I mean, there was obviously no drinking. You didn't know smoking. You didn't even go to movies, you didn't listen to rock music, and you definitely didn't dance, or actually wasn't.
It's like Footloose.
Yes, Footloose. Exactly. That is what I grew up in. There was this joke that my Baptist friends said it went something like this. You know, Nazarenes don't believe in premarital sex. And do you know why? It could lead to dancing. And so that's how much we did not like to dance. But nonetheless, I was president of my student council, and we had to run the dance. So I had to run the dance. I could not even attend. That's how kind of crazy it was from the world that I grew up in. Well, nonetheless, I can't dance. All right, let's move on here now to our next campaign tip. Let's get off that topic. Here, campaign slogans. All right, everyone wants to have a quippy, memorable campaign slogan. Here's my suggestion, Mackenzie. Try them out on your teenager first. I am just suggesting that, you know, if you get any kind of giggle or response from your teenage son, you might want to rethink that campaign slogan. Here's an actual real slogan from the 1928 presidential campaign. This is what the slogan said. Vote for Al Smith and make your wet dreams come true. Now, if put you back in your teenage self, would you not giggle at that?
I don't know if I can even make a comment. It's what did that even mean? Did that have some kind of like semantic connotation in the 1920s that like clearly has changed over time? Like I'm just very confused.
I am just going to suggest that wet dreams did not come into being sometime post 1928. So I think they knew full well what that meant. But yes, there obviously was an alternative meaning here. It was prohibition, and you had wet counties, you had dry counties. Dry counties did not allow for alcohol, but wet counties would. And so that was his whole...
I was thinking, geez, Al Smith's going to have a lot of work to do when he gets in office.
Right. So I'm just saying, if he had run that by his teenage son first, maybe it wouldn't have been a disaster of a campaign. But Herbert Hoover clearly won. You don't know President Al Smith. So he did lose, though he had a really funny campaign slogan. All right. How about this one? This is my next tip is this. Not all campaign attacks need to be responded to. Right. I mean, just because someone attacks you based upon a certain issue does not mean you need to respond to it. I think maybe right now Biden is doing that really well. Right. He's being attacked with these laptop computer for Hunter. He is not responding to it. But the reason why I mentioned this ad, this idea, goes back to Christine O'Donnell. Do you know who Christine O'Donnell is?
Oh, I'm originally from Delaware, so I know, very well who Christine O'Donnell is.
All right. She was a Republican candidate for Joe Biden's old Senate seat in 2010. Now, since you're from Delaware, maybe you can provide some back context for the story. But apparently somewhere along the way, there's an allegation that she was a witch. I'm not quite sure how that came to be, but she was attacked as being a witch. And so she decided to come up with her own commercial, and she lit up the commercial by saying, "I am not a witch, I am you." And she was mocked mercilessly by Saturday Night Live for that. Any thoughts on Christine O'Donnell's slogan, "I am not a witch, I am you"?
So, yeah, she was one of the most like well-known Tea Party. She was like part of the Tea Party Express, I think, right when like the whole in the first couple years of Obama's first term, when the Tea Party was really like up and running. Right, she was a major Tea Party player in this area of the country. And she had so many problems in her campaign from the beginning. Like, it was just like she was like living off campaign donations and had all these financial issues and was kind of cray cray, like general. But I think Bill Maher on his show somehow found an audio clip. I can't remember if it was a video or audio, but there was a clip of her saying, "I dabbled in witchcraft. I like went to a satanic altar and did, you know," and she's like, I don't remember how the clip ended. Maybe she said like, it wasn't for me or whatever.
It was just dabbling.
She just dabbled. And I don't know if she knew the altar was satanic. It was just an altar. Like, who even knows? But yeah, she felt the need to respond to it because it sounded pretty out there and crazy. And the response, I guess, was worse than the original.
Right, right.
You know, sometimes you just got to say, like, that doesn't even just dignify let it go. A response.
Yeah. Exactly. Just let it go. But I'm thinking Little Dabble Do You could have been the response to that. But nonetheless... That is a campaign slogan from some product. I just don't remember what product that actually was. But again, not a bad tip. Not all attacks need to be responded to. All right, here's my next tip for you. If you are Pinocchio, maybe running for public office is not for you. It does take a certain rough, exterior, thick skin. And if you can't tell a lie, I'm just to suggest that maybe running for office is not exactly in your cards. I'm referring to a local Filipino election, and this candidate's campaign motto was this: "I'll do my best, but I can't promise anything." Now, I like that campaign slogan. But
I love that so much. I really do.
It's like, you know what? I'm going to do my best, but I can't really promise anything. Do you think he was elected?
It's so refreshing. I mean, probably not. But don't you, like, doesn't that endear? I mean, I just feel like if someone, anyone, could come out and say something even remotely approximating that these days, it would just, at the very least, it would be so refreshing.
But here's the thing. This is why you and I are all full of BS, because we agree with that. We say that. But that's not what works. That's not what wins.
You have to
lie out your backside, promise the moon. And then if afterwards someone says you did promise it, again, refer back to one of our earlier debate rules, lie, and then just repeat that lie a little bit louder, and you'll be okay. But if you say, "I'll do my best, but I can't promise anything," you're going to be flipping burgers. But nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, that guy was not pathological enough. Like, you've got to be, I think the best, and I use the term best very broadly, but I think the best, or I guess most effective politicians, like, not only do they lie, I mean, what's the definition of a lie? Like, do you have to know and believe that it's false? Because I think a lot of these people, they truly, like, they're pathological enough to where, like, they actually believe lies. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. I really think
you have to have a pathology, I think. I mean, you know, and not everyone. I mean, I think there really are some politicians out there who are more statespeople than politicians. And I think those are mostly, you know, people from districts that, you know, promote that and accept that. And there's not so much, you know, diversity, you know, in the district. In other words, like, people, the constituency is very, has a solid foundation of one political belief or another, like one set of priorities or another. And so in that sense, it's very easy for a candidate to, you know, that kind of creates the candidates who just go with that and everyone kind of supports it. But when you have like a presidential election or a Senate election where you're trying to get a big melting pot of people to vote a certain way, like, you have to try to appeal to these broad swaths of people that are incredibly diverse. And it's difficult to do that. I mean, it's difficult to do that without saying BS.
You know why? That exactly. Go back to our earlier debate tips of it's all about the children. And just as long as you keep saying it's all about the children.
You're exactly right.
you might be okay. Just avoid anything real. All right. Well,
yeah, especially when you don't have a war, right? Like when you have a common enemy, it's a lot easier. Like, okay, so it's terrorists or it's Hitler or what, like that makes it a lot easier. I think in a situation that like we're in now, it's more like we're turning against each other. And that's what makes everyone so uneasy. Like we see ourselves doing it. We know we're doing it. Everyone knows this is what's going on. And we're very uneasy, but we're watching it happen. And we're all, to one extent or another, we're all part of it. And we're all playing into it. But it's like it's a slow motion car crash, right? Like we can all see it happening.
All right. Well, let's go back now. We've already kind of hinted at this next tip. A very good tip, by the way. It just needs its own, you know, it needs to be flushed out here in its entirety. You probably should avoid any sexual innuendo in your campaign slogan. Again, this is very similar to what you said earlier about run it through your teenage son or daughter first and see if they smirk. Let's go back to 1844. So, yes, it's well before your time. This is even before my time. Democrat Franklin Pierce was running for president, and this was his campaign slogan. We poked you in 44, we shall pierce you in 52. Now, for you non-history majors, James Polk ran for president in 44. That's where the we poked you reference came from. His name was Franklin Pierce. That's we shall pierce you in 52. Again, just a thought, you might want to avoid any sexual innuendo in your campaign slogans. Good advice?
Yeah, again, unless you're Donald Trump, this applies across the board. Somehow, he's got a free pass on this one, too, but, like, let's move on.
Well, again, if you don't quite believe me, listen to this clip right here of one vice presidential candidate, Joseph Biden, talking about... So let me just give you a little bit of context here. This was Theodore Roosevelt. Remember his saying, carry a big stick?
Speak softly, but carry a big stick. Yeah.
Yes. All right. Let's listen here to Joseph Biden in 2012.
Now is the time to heed the timeless advice from Teddy Roosevelt. Speak softly and carry a big stick. End of quote. I promise you, the president has a big stick. I promise you.
All right, so again, keep that in mind. You want to avoid any and all sexual innuendo. All right, which does lead me to my next tip here, which is try to minimize the hair sniffing. Good, bad tip? What say you, Mackenzie?
I don't want my hair sniffed. I feel like you're picking on Biden, and I don't like it, but I cannot disagree. It's not a good... Not a good look.
Yeah, avoid any hair sniffing. If that's really what you're into, is it cosmetology? Is that the name of when you actually cut people's hair?
I think cosmetology is like broader because it includes like makeup and I don't know anything about this stuff, but
nah,
yeah.
Either. All right. Well, you are suggesting I'm attacking Biden. So let me attack the other way. Here's my next tip. This comes... in this day and age, there are a lot of allegations out there, and some of them are true, some of them are not true, right? We all can admit that, but I am just going to suggest that when you are charged with something like, let's say, sexual assault, your response should not be, no, that couldn't have happened, she's not my type. Do you know what I'm referring to here?
I know what you're referring to, and this is another place where, you know, the green nausea emojis were flying around, like, gross.
How dumb was he? So E. Jean Carroll, who's a journalist, by the way, alleged that Trump sexually assaulted her back in the 1990s in some luxury department store dressing room. And so Trump thought, you know what, I'm going to respond to this and say, no, I would not have sexually assaulted her because she's not my type. In what world is that ever a good response to that kind of allegation?
These are the types of things where if you're a criminal defense attorney and your client wants that to be part of his or her testimony, you just you duct tape their mouth shut. Like,
right. We're not going to allow our client to testify. I don't care if he does have that right to make that determination. I'm out of here if he's going to testify, because that is just stupid beyond stupid. But by the way, that's also a recent case just this last week. So that's what the president said. The president said, I did not assault her. She is lying. She's not my type. So she filed a defamation lawsuit against the president. What happened was the DOJ tried to intervene and say, look, this is a defamation lawsuit against the president based upon statements that he said as president, and so therefore the DOJ is the proper defendant here. And so the district court said, no, responding to sexual assaults is not the job of a president. That's him in his personal capacity. Therefore, he is a defendant in his own personal capacity. And so the lawsuit is continuing on. So we'll have to follow that lawsuit as it goes on. But that
I would love to cross-examine. So if that's the response, right, the cross-exam is, so what you're saying is, if she had been your type, it wouldn't be so clear that she's lying, because there could be a possibility. And then you just go through, because there's so much fodder, and prove that she, in fact, is his type.
Right, right.
Because he's been seen with so many. I mean, you know, I don't know exactly what E. Jean Carroll looks like, but like, Trump's been with so many women. I'm sure you could find a few that like fit the same type. So it's just... It really, I'm sitting here just shaking my head. I don't even,
Words escape us there when he does those kind of things. All right, we are just getting started here. We got a lot more tips to go here. How about this one from 1988? I know it's well before your time, but Gary Hart was the leader in the clubhouse as far as he was running for the Democratic nomination for president in 1988. So Ronald Reagan had just been completing his two terms. Gary Hart was running it for the Democratic nomination. And the allegation was that he was a ladies' man. And so he was playing fast and loose there. He was married, and the allegation was that he was, having affairs, and so he was tired of it. So he told the press, if anybody wants to put a tail on me, go ahead. All right, so you get the picture I'm trying to paint for you here?
Yeah.
He's challenging the press to put a tail on him. All right, so here's the tip. Don't challenge the press that if anybody wants to put a tail on me, go ahead. And then take a model on a private yacht called Monkey Business. That's not a real good idea. But that's what he did. He took a model named Donna Rice on a private yacht called Monkey Business. Of course, the press were alerted because Gary Hart told them, follow me. I'm going to be doing nothing I shouldn't be doing. And they had all kinds of pictures, and that doomed his presidential nomination. So a good tip, bad tip?
I mean, I think it was a good tip in 1988, but it just also goes to show you like how far we've devolved since then, because I feel like if something like that happened now, it would literally be the least of our concerns.
Right. I know.
Like, we've really gone downhill.
I mean, Gary Hart has to
be
thinking.
I'm not suggesting that people should do that. Let me clarify.
You're just suggesting that based upon what President Donald Trump said that was caught on tape about where women like to be grabbed, if he can get away with saying that and still win the election, maybe Gary Hart was too quick to withdraw from the race. Maybe he could have actually stayed in the race a little bit longer to see how things played out. But of course, he went ahead and dropped from the race. All right.
To be fair, like, you got to blame a large part on Bill Clinton here. So I think after Clinton, everything changed in terms of that stuff. So I'm going to try and be fair as well. Like,
I know.
Let's put, blame where blame is due.
Yes, with Bill Clinton, I don't know what your thought was during that whole fiasco. My thought was, this is all being made up. There is no way Bill Clinton did the things it is being suggested he did with an intern as president. I mean, come on. We all knew what the allegation, the rumors were about when he was governor. So now that he's a president, there's no way he's doing these things. And yet he did. And so we were, it was a game changer. All right. Well, how about, I know you're going to agree with this tip. This is a good tip for you all. Please, if you are considering getting into political life, here's your tip. resist all urges to tweet from the bathroom at 3 a.m. There's so many different moving pieces to that tip. We got bathroom, we got 3 a.m. When all of these factors come together, resist the urge to tweet. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, again, like, I feel like it hasn't really done any harm to our current president. But generally, if you're a normal person, I completely agree. Although I have to say, like, I am drinking my afternoon cup of Covfefe right now. And there are some gems. And I do think that the Donald Trump Presidential Library should just include like an entire section that's just filled with his tweets. I mean, it's so voluminous at this point. So we do need, it is a part of our national story, whether we like it or not at this point. But I guess what I would say, I would put a caveat. Like, if you're going to tweet from the bathroom at 3 a.m., you better know what you're doing.
So resist that urge. Now, what you just said has my mind racing. There's going to be a whole wing to his presidential library on just his tweets. That's going to be a fascinating read.
They're going to have to come up with a whole new Dewey Decimal System to catalog them.
Wow. All right. How about this one? I'm going to attack on some other politicians here. This next one is not a bad tip. Here's a tip for you. If your last name is Wiener, you might want to consider a name change. I'm just saying legally it is possible to change one's name. And if your last name is Wiener and you want to run for public office, you might want to go down that road. It might be a thought. Any thoughts on that?
If your last name is Wiener and you want to run for office, don't send nude photos over social media.
Also a good tip, because when you get all these factors together, it's going to blow the mind. Our minds can only handle so much, and that just sends us over the top. All right, a couple more here. This also is before your time, but don't ever say these words. Don't say these words. Read my lips. Do not say those words. It's not going to end well for you. Do you know what I'm referring to with that phrase?
George H.W. Bush, new taxes, right? And I think this is like the best tip. It's not only a campaign tip. And it actually applies, like, not necessarily the words read my lips, but it also reminds me so much of when Obama said, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. You are writing checks you cannot cash. Like, that is not a good idea in campaigning, in political life, in regular life. Not make promises that you can't keep. Just a great piece of advice all around.
Very wise. Well, I'm going to just close here with this last tip, then I'll get your final thoughts here. But as a politician, do not underestimate the motivation of all the different voting groups. Especially, do not underestimate the motivation of the deceased vote. I'm telling you, that is a huge voting block. Don't ignore them. They have thoughts and concerns too. But I'm thinking of Charles D.B. King, won the 1927 Liberia presidential election with 234,000 votes, but there were only 15,000 registered voters in that entire nation. But yeah, he somehow got 234,000 votes. So yeah, do not underestimate the power of the deceased to vote. Vote early and vote often, is what I say.
I'm a Democrat. I can't argue with that, right?
That's right. Yes, exactly. Yo, I love it how that joke goes. I can't believe my dad voted Republican. He never would have done that when he was alive.
Right, exactly.
I should take out Republican, put in Democrat, but nonetheless, you get the idea. All right, any final thoughts here on great tips, or have I convinced you now to, with these tips, you think you now can run for office in a couple of years?
I sometimes feel like I should be running the country. Because I feel like I do, you know, I'll close with this. As I was turning the corner on Saturday to finish my marathon, and I saw my family there waiting for me, and my nieces and nephews and my stepkids and my kids and my husband, and it was just such a great moment, and I was so proud of myself. And then I saw my 11-year-old nephew and all my kids and nieces and nephews have made handmade signs. They were so cute. Right. My 11-year-old nephew had a huge sign that said, "You run better than the government." And I just thought that was the cutest thing I've ever seen. And it was not false.
No.
You, I actually accomplished everything I set out to do. So I give myself an A+, and I give the rest of the candidates, you know, like, C's, D's.
I think you'd make a great candidate. All we got to do is make sure you stick to these tips and then make sure you delete all of those Elaine Bennis dance videos that you have of your first wedding. And then I think
I'm definitely not a witch. So I've got like a leg up on some people.
You're going to be a shoo-in. You will be a shoo-in and it'll all work. Well, thank you so much, Mackenzie, for your thoughts today, and have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review. We need your love to help us continue highlighting the funnier side of the law. I want to give a special shout out to our Vice President of Operations, Wendy Oster, without whom this entire operation would be a mess. Sean Wynn and 15.5 Features for making me sound way better than I actually do. And Ryan Kuhn and Paul Kuhn of Triplicity Marketing for our technical and computer support.